Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
I've got a man who's strong to the finish.
I've got a Pope. I've got a Pope going back to where a Pope should be. A Pope at home.
Game fight!
Hello there. Welcome to Date Fight. It's the podcast where we take great moments from history and we pitch them against each other.
We do indeed. He's Jake Yap. I'm Nat Tapley. And together we have taken two buses from the timetable of history and are comparing them to see which one turns up most entertainingly.
Well, you don't want to get... The X isn't faster because it goes to the shopping centre. So just get the 36.
Yes, essentially...
Yeah.
Jake goes around the housing estate, but I go direct to the station, so...
Let's do this.
Round one!
Right, I'm going to take you back to the 17th of January, 1377, when Pope Gregory reached Rome.
Yeah, so? Who cares,
Popes
mate?
Live
Move
in
on.
Rome. That's where popes are. Yeah. Pope, Rome, that's where popes go. Except for the fact that the popes hadn't been to Rome for the previous 74 years. Because in 1303, Pope Boniface VIII kept telling kings what to do. He wrote a papal bull saying, "It's necessary to salvation that every human creature be subject to the Roman pontiff." Mm-hmm. And kings obviously didn't like that very much. Particularly not Philip IV of France. He hated that. In fact, he hated it so much that he wrote a letter back to the Pope saying, "Your venerable conceitedness may know that we are nobody's vassal in temporal
matters."
That's
proper mic drop.
He said it in French, though, yeah. "Your venerable conceitedness..."
Wow.
"Yeah. May know we are nobody's vassal in temporal matters." Boom. And just to prove his point, to make his point very clear, he's got a group of people together who went to the Pope's house and... beat him up for 3 days!
For 3 days?
3 days of beatings. King Philip IV beat Pope Boniface VIII. I mean, I think having a Pope beaten up, that's quite something to put. That should go on your CV. That, disagreed with Pope.
I organised the 3-day beating up of a Pope.
Yeah, I mean, I'd listen to that person. I think they've got something to say. And if I don't listen, they might have me beaten up for 3 days.
Yeah, I am an excellent team player. I also work on my own, and I do get poked.
Successfully organised the considerable beating of a pontiff.
Yeah. I tell you what, his jaw wasn't infallible, was it?
After that, they went to have a conclave to have a new pope, and he went, "No, I don't think you can sit in Rome and decide who the new pope is. From now on, popes live in France. And do any of you potential popes want to disagree with me? Because look at your previous pope, who got beaten up for 3 days. Oh, I forgot to say, after the 3 days, he died."
Oh.
Well, it was about a month later, but he was still recovering. I mean, it was pretty directly connected to the 3-day beating he'd suffered.
Jeepers.
A month later, Boniface VIII died, and then Philip IV said, "Okay, anyone else want to be pope? Because if you do, there are new rules. You live with me now and I tell you what to do." So the popes lived in Avignon for 74 years until Pope Gregory decided to sneak off back to Rome. At which point, new popes popped up in Avignon saying, "No, the ones who've run off back to Rome aren't the real popes now. We're the real popes."
Of course.
And we call them the anti-popes. So this was the beginning of the Western Schism on the 17th of January, 1377.
I've always sort of thought of myself as the anti-pope, really.
Well, do you live in Avignon?
Well, I've thought about it.
Let's go to Avignon. Should we go to Avignon?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's go there.
Are we going to live there?
Oh, King Philip, the person who became pope after Boniface VIII was just a friend of Philip IV's called Bertrand de Gaulle.
Do you want to go?
And Philip IV said to him, "You should probably have a trial for that pope who accidentally died himself to death after being beaten." But I hear he was very heretical and a sodomite. So they had a trial for him after his death.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
That's a lovely final touch of degradation, isn't it?
I mean, Philip IV was keen on that because I think we talked about him before. He was the one who organised getting rid of the Templars by accusing them of being heretics and sodomites. That was his key move. If he didn't like you, you were very much a heretic and sodomite in Philip IV's eyes.
Okay, well, I'm going to take you back to the 17th of January. Let's do the non-jolly one.
Ooh.
1977, 600 years on from yours.
What happened then?
Well, after 10 years of no capital punishment in the United States...
Oh, yes, yeah.
...they decide to go back and have some.
That's right.
Because, you know, retro's cool. It's kind of like the 90s now. Everyone's
we tried not killing everyone.
Yeah, but we discovered... We got a certain something out of it.
The
guy who got killed was Gary Gilmore.
Yes, we had him in the Death Days.
Oh, well, there you go.
Last month or the month before.
Yeah.
Gary Gilmore, yes.
Well, he was...
Double murderer Gary Gilmore.
Yes, and he was executed by firing squad, which feels very old school. Like, they didn't just go back to, well, we're going to kill people, but, like, we're going to do it old school. Like, let's beat them up for 3 days and see what happens.
Yeah, we're going to put them on the rack first.
Oi, you heretic. You sort of right. Oh, yeah?
Any popes?
You look like one, mate. No, only joking. You're all right. Only joking. Firing squad. It's extraordinary because prior to that, in 1972, there had been a case called Furman versus the state of Georgia.
Mm.
And that had resulted in earlier death penalty statutes being deemed cruel and unusual punishments.
Mm.
And therefore, they weren't constitutional.
Yes.
And the Supreme Court had, after that, said all states should commute death sentences to life imprisonment.
I mean, that seems like that would fix it.
But it seems that Utah were like, nah, come on!
I've got a non-cruel and non-unusual. I mean, in some ways, cruel and unusual is a definition of any killing of any person.
Yes, I mean, cruel, certainly. It's going to tick the cruel box. I mean, it's not necessarily that unusual, depending on where you are and what's going on around you. Although I'd say
it was unusual in 1977.
It was definitely unusual.
They hadn't done it for 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hadn't done it for 10 years. It became more unusual the longer they didn't do it.
Yeah. Well, the thing was that after that, Utah had to come up with new ways to do it in an unusual way. So the worst was...
Did they do a different one for each person?
Oh, teaspoon no. Took hours. Like, you wouldn't believe it.
Did they have smothered by a clown? I like to think of them thinking of more unusual ways for each person.
Blancmange.
Yeah, just elephants. Just a pile of elephants.
Hens. Right, let's have some birthdays.
Happy birthday to Peter Roget, whose thesaurus has been disappointing children by not being a dinosaur for centuries. He also invented the slide rule. So in the song Don't Know Much About History, where he says he doesn't know what a slide rule is for, if it weren't for Peter Roget, he wouldn't even have to. Happy birthday, Peter Roget. Also, happy birthday to Daniel Williams, who performed the first open-heart surgery. He was born today in Hollidaysburg, Pennsylvania. Hollidaysburg sounds fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, let's go to Hollidaysburg.
It's probably awful. Let's not.
It sounds like a euphemism.
I think if something's good, they don't have to call it Hollidaysburg. Calling Disneyland the most wonderful place on earth is only called that to disguise the fact that actually you can see that it's not really that nice in places.
Whereas if they called it Hollidaysburg, I mean, you know, it was named after... You know, traditionally, places have been...
I don't need to take a holiday. I feel like I'm on holiday every day.
I mean, places are called things like, you know, Dead Man's Gulch or Shallow Creek. Like, it's named after a thing. Hollidaysburg?
Yeah.
Or maybe it was a trap.
Yeah, I think it is.
Come to Hollidaysburg.
It seems too perfect to be true.
Nothing could go wrong in Hollidaysburg.
Every day's a holiday in Hollidaysburg.
Shing!
Also, happy birthday to Samantha Mumba, Irish dancer and actress who...
You're doing these ones for me.
You must have a story.
That's
about Samantha
Mumba.
That's
very sweet of you.
She seems very much in your era.
Yeah, I wasn't big on her. Steps, all the way.
Well, none of them were born today, unfortunately, so no birthdays to Steps.
Okay, but let me know when they are, won't you? Yeah. You'll let me know, right?
Ian H. Watkins on the phone, ready to dial in and tell you all about his birthday. Happy Death Day. Death Day to Rudyard Kipling, the snake describer and empire enthusiast who wrote the Just So stories and the Jungle Book. And If, which is just a long poem which no one needs to hear except at funerals.
Well, the original draft was, if you're going up the garage, can you get me some silk cap?
That's the best verse. Yeah.
If you could get some pot noodles as well. If you could get some toilet
then
paper.
Then my son, he'll be a man.
Yeah.
Happy death day to Charles Ponzi, he of the scheme.
Oh.
One of his first jobs was working in a bank which offered 6%, which was twice as much interest as any other bank offered. And when he was working there, he noticed that the way the bank worked was that the manager just took all the deposits and was paying the interest with the new deposits and then embezzling the rest and running off. And he ran off and disappeared completely. So that was his first experience of work in America when he immigrated. He went to prison later on, where he met Charles Moore, who was a Wall Street banker. He was there who showed him how to fake having fits by eating the soap every morning so he could look like you were frothing at the mouth.
Oh my God.
When he left prison, he became a nurse in a mining camp. And he had an idea that he could start a scheme to sell gas and water supplies to mining camps. But while he was there, another nurse needed a skin graft because they were caught in an explosion, and he gave them 1,400 cubic centimetres of skin from his back to use.
That's
despite having never met
amazing.
Them. So Charles Ponzi wasn't all bad. At least 1,400 centimetres cubed squared of him was pretty good.
That's a lot of square centimetres.
It is, isn't it? That seems like a lot. As a result of it...
That's got to be a whole back, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be the back. That's a full back, oh. I reckon. Being a back area expert. As a result of it, he lost his job because he was in such ill health having donated so much skin. But then he came up with this idea, having noticed when someone sent him an international reply coupon... that postage, you could redeem it for your local amount of postage. So someone had bought it in Italy, sent it to him. And of course, postage in Italy in 1919 was much cheaper because the lira had collapsed.
Right.
So they were paying very little, essentially, for the postage. Then they were sending the coupon to him, and he could redeem it for... to be sent locally. So he could redeem it for sort of 20 cents worth of stamps, something they'd bought for a cent in Italy. He went, oh, well, this is obviously a great scheme. I can make lots of money doing this. So he went around to people, selling them... if you invest $100, I will go and buy lots of stamps and international reply coupons in Italy, have them sent to me, and I'll redeem them in America, and we can make 400% profits. It's going to be great. And for the first month, he did it, and it was okay. The second month, he did it, and he was paying with the people who'd paid... That month, he paid off the people who'd... Oh, he was promising 100% return in 90 days, or a 50% return in 45 days.
Right.
And so he was having to pay off the people investing with the new deposits because he worked out that actually you would need to be carrying whole mail ships. With the volume he was dealing with, by July he was bringing millions of dollars a week.
Wow.
And he would have to be bringing over whole mail ships full of nothing but international reply coupons, and he hadn't set up any system for actually buying them in Italy yet. So he was just essentially having to pay off everyone who'd invested with the money that was coming in. And it collapsed and he went to jail. And that was the original Ponzi scheme.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I should have used him in one of the competing bits, but he just died.
Yeah, you should have.
So
you absolutely threw that
Charles
one away.
Ponzi.
Oh, look, I'm just going to say, vote for Nat. When it comes to voting online at the end of this podcast, vote for Nat, because that was an extra. That was a hole.
Yeah.
You earned that.
Also, happy death day to Wilfred Bramble, who is Steptoe.
Yes. One of those ones everyone has a go at.
Yes, I'm sure we could do that for 4 or 5 minutes. We're running short today.
Nope. Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Okay, I've got January the 17th, 1929.
What happened then?
Popeye the Sailor Man first appears in the Thimble Theatre comic strip, who's created by E.C. Seeger.
Mm-hmm.
So Thimble Theatre had been running for some time.
Right.
And the main characters were the very thin Olive Oil and her boyfriend, a man by the name of Harold Hamgravy.
He sounds like my kind of guy.
Yes, yeah. And it was a sort of comedy adventure thing. There was Olive and Hamgravy. And Olive had a brother.
Please don't make your acquaintance, sir. It's Harold Hamgravy.
Olive had a brother. I don't know if you knew this.
Oh, I didn't.
Whose name was Castor.
Castor Oil, yep. Okay.
And she had parents called Cole and Nana Oil.
Boiled in.
So what do you think Popeye... what's the sort of superhuman attribute that he gets, and how does he get it, Nat?
Okay, he gets amazing strength from eating spinach.
Not originally.
Oh, what did he do originally?
Originally, he got amazing luck.
Ooh.
From rubbing the head of the Whiffle Hen. Not quite so iconic.
No wonder he's got those big arm muscles.
Yeah.
I spent most of my teenage years rubbing the head of my Whiffle Hen.
Yeah, don't
bring me any luck.
The head of your Whiffle Hen because of lesions. Seagar was amazing. He decided he wanted to be a cartoonist when he was 18, and he took a correspondence course in it.
Mm.
from W.L. Evans in Ohio, and he'd go to work, and then he'd work till 3 a.m. on the course, and it worked. He only lived to be 43, sadly. By the way, you know spinach? You know how it's got, like, loads of iron in it?
Yes.
No, it doesn't.
What does it have? Just green. Is it just greenness?
It has got iron in it, but there was a study done, I can't remember when, in Germany, with the amounts of iron in vegetables.
Right.
And there was one, during the translation of it, someone put the decimal point in the wrong place, leading everyone to conclude that spinach had 10 times the iron in it that it does.
Spinach is a liar.
Spinach is a dirty liar.
Wow. I feel cheated.
And it's also got a lot of oxalic acid in it, which means you should only eat it once a week, apparently.
Oh, well, I mean, even that... Yep, okay, that's fair enough.
So much for the spanakopita nuts and Popeye.
So, in Popeye...
Yeah.
Sweepy is the... Is Sweepy actually his son? Olive Oil and he married? Or is any of this defined? Or is it just sort of... There's a baby, which is probably theirs.
I don't know. I mean, they were really raving. Those early cartoons were, comic strips, were quite mad and very surreal. Yeah. Alice the Goon was bizarre. And, they were very kind of quite creepy, I think.
I must go, but let's revisit them. Let's do a whole special.
They're worth revisiting. They're properly creepy.
Excellent. That's my afternoon sorted. I'm going to take you to the 17th of January, 1562. When France... I'm doing a lot of France today. France recognises Huguenots in the Edict of Saint-Germain. So the Huguenots were France's Protestants, and until 1562 they hadn't been recognised at all by the state. And in 1562, France decided that it was okay to notice that there were Protestants in your country. they swiftly followed that up in 1572 with the St. Bartholomew's Day Massacre, in which they decided to kill all the Protestants in the country.
Oh, wow.
Between 5 and 30,000 were left dead, the leaders of the Huguenots were killed, and lots of Huguenots started emigrating. I mean, I know today we like to get wound up about identity politics, but essentially the 16th and 17th centuries are just 200 years of trying to genocide anyone who is different to you.
That's Darwinism.
Yeah. Woke snowflakes chopped off Archbishop's Lord head just because they can't bear mass.
Well.
I've made the Catholics into Piers Morgan for some reason. Sorry, Catholics. That's just the law. You're Piers Morgan. Anyway, so in 1685, with the revocation of the Edict of Nantes, the Huguenots were forcibly converted to Catholicism, leading to 50 to 80,000 Huguenots moving to England, which is why Spitalfields looks so much nicer than lots of the rest of the East End, because they brought their textile manufacturing, they brought silk manufacturing, lace manufacturing, watchmaking, and of course, they gave us Nigel Farage. Thank you, Huguenots. And thank you, the 17th century and 16th century, for just being such a mad time full of... In this country, we seem to sort of... It was a bit quaint that we had priest holes and the gunpowder plot, when actually you're talking about people having to hide from death squads and, you know, an attempted assassination of all of the people in government at the time.
Yes, how quaint, so we think. How
it was
quaint.
Slightly less picturesque than... Oh, we've got a priest hole. Oh, do you? Can I have a look? Can I have a get in? Get out of my priest hole. That's just for priests.
Oh, I thought there was a priest hole on Hampstead Heath. Popeye.
Wow.
Olive oil and priest's hole. What a day in history.
Pop holes and priest's eyes.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But which bits of it were the best? It's your turn to decide.
It was the beating up of Boniface.
It was the one you did in the Death Days, let's be honest.
Oh, the Ponzi scheme. Yeah. Charles Ponzi.
Go and vote for Nat. You can vote for him at date_fight on Twitter.
Or at facebook.com/datefight. Just occurs to me that Charles Ponzi, should do a sequel about him, which is called The Ponds, and he lives above... The Ponds. That's as far as I've got with it. I mean, there's no... Let's not do that. See you tomorrow. But think about that. Think on that.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.